On this 28th day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 24, The Philosophy of Sankhya, text number 16. Ano brihat krisha stulo.
Ano brihat krisha stulo.
Yo yo bhava prasidyati.
Yo yo bhava prasidyati.
Sarvo yubhaya sanyukta.
Sarvo yubhaya sanyukta.
Prakritya purushena cha.
Prakritya purushena cha.
Translation. Whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contain both the material nature and its enjoyer, the spirit soul. So I'm going to read a similar verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 27, and Prabhupada's purport, and then we'll speak. Yavat sanjayate kinchit sattvam stavata jangamam, chaitra chaitragya sanyogat tadvidhi bharatarshavam. O chief of the Bharatas, know that whatever you see in existence, both the moving and the non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. Purport. Both material nature and the living entity, which were existing before the creation of the cosmos, are explained in this verse. Whatever is created is but a combination of the living entity and material nature. There are many manifestations like trees, mountains, and hills which are not moving, and there are many existences which are moving, and all of them are but combinations of material nature and the superior nature, the living entity. Without the touch of the superior nature, the living entity, nothing can grow. The relationship between material nature and spiritual nature is eternally going on, and this combination is effected by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he is the controller of both the superior and inferior natures. The material nature is created by him, and the superior nature is placed in this material nature, and thus all these activities and manifestations take place. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gravenam. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So I thought I'd read this similar verse and its purport, because this is a very important concept for us to understand in devotional service. So much of what we do, everything that we do and think about, it's premised or based on how we see this world and how we see ourselves, our conception of ourselves. This is why so much of what we've been reading is how the false ego interacts with these different material elements, or the different modes, excuse me, and produces the different elements that go up to make up this whole universe. Because the ego is the sense of self. As you perceive yourself, you also perceive the world. Atmavan manyate jagat. Someone who's very lusty, you know, walking down Garnet Avenue, very practical example, you know. So he's on the prowl, right? And then, of course, he's the big, you know, heavenly planet he's looking for is the beach, right? And you get to the beach and you can see all of the scantily clad ladies. But yeah, he's on the prowl. He's seeing everything in terms of where is there some object for my desire. And, some old man or old lady walking down the road, doesn't even see him. You know, that's like, that doesn't matter. You know, you're looking like that. Somebody who's very in the entrepreneurial mood, you know, where can I make some money? How can I make some money? You know, maybe a con man, you know, who is it that I can? He's seeing that the world in those, you know, that way. So all of this, is part of the illusory energy. This Sankhya philosophy is meant to give us the eyes to see the world in a different way. To see it, to analyze it, to understand all these different elements, how they're fitting together, how they're working together, and what the source is. I mean, we're always moving toward the source. This is our inquiry. It's the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, is that being a human being, a tato brahma jigyasa, one should inquire into the source of everything. Not just to look at the different varieties of the effects, but to the cause of everything, the original source of everything. That's the main mission of human life. So this is one of the ways in which it helps us. If you analyze our daily experiences in terms of the source of everything, then you begin to see differently. You understand yourself in that context of this world differently, rather than just that this is a field, this is a chaitra, for us to enjoy and exploit and sometimes to avoid, right, if it's painful. You're just working with the field rather than the knower of the field and the ultimate knower of the field. That's why this chapter 13 is so nice. There's also a lot of Sankhya in there. And Sankhya means this analytical mood. He gives the summary analysis of what this world is in that chapter. He also analyzes what are the elements of knowledge, you know. And then he gives what is the goal of knowledge, what is the object of knowledge. And these are all essential understandings for us to practice our bhakti yoga, self-realization process. So it's revolutionary to think like this, but this is, Krishna says here, and he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that everything that exists in this world is but a combination of spirit and matter. So we begin with ourselves, with our own bodies. This is the first lesson of the Gita, right? That that we're not just the body. That the body is like an outer covering of the real self of the soul. There's an eternal distinction between the body and the soul, between the lower energy, which makes up this body, and the higher energy, the para prakriti. Prakriti means energy, and apara means lower, para means transcendental. So we ourselves, we're part of the energy. Whose energy? Krishna's energy. He says in the seventh chapter, it's very clear. So every body that we see, they just like the living beings before we get into the inanimate things, are just this combination of this the chaitra and the chaitra gya. It's a very, very nice little metaphor that Krishna uses. It's like a field of activity, this body. Right? We do so many things. We're experiencing through these senses. We experience, you know, the pains and pleasures of the body. This is the field for the soul to experience. So we are the chaitra gya. The word gya, like it's a knowledge, jnana, and gya, knower, the knower of the field. That's all we're doing. We're simply knowing this field. It also includes the subtle body, the mind. We're also knowing that. We're not the mind. That's harder to realize than we're not the body. Everyone identifies with, I'm depressed. That's who I am. I'm a depressed person. You know? No, you're not. It's your mind has been affected by the modes of nature, and now you've got this. So, and then Krishna makes a very important point, which is also part of Sankhya, that there is another knower in everybody. Two knowers, the super soul and the individual soul. And if you understand the knower or the knowers and the field, that's real knowledge. Without understanding that, if you just know different varieties of the field, you know, it can be very intricate and very wonderful, you know, but that's ignorance. Without understanding the knower, the soul, and the super soul, then it's just varieties of ignorance. And that's what we're surrounded by. And that's what, we're also struggling with in ourselves. To simply be absorbed, or absorb the mind, the intelligence, in the intricacies and the interactions of this field. So the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, the Vedas in general, Vedanta Sutra, is always directing us toward the source of all of this, the ultimate knower, the ultimate conscious being, which is a person, is Krishna. So now let's look at the inanimate things, so-called inanimate things. This floor, or so much ground. There's so many things that are inanimate in this world, right? The car. Now, how is that a combination? How is that a combination of the knower and the? Well, there's two ways. First of all, we have to understand that in every atom, there's the super soul is there, right? So right away you have the combination of matter and spirit. And there's also the understanding that every element has its God, has its personality who's in charge of it. For the earth, there's Bhumi. For the air, there's Vayu. For the water, there's Varuna. For the light and the sun, there's Agni. And for this, there's Surya. Everything has a personality behind it. Nothing is simply happening automatically by chance. There's always an intelligent personality. We live in a universe. This is a really important way of seeing this world. That everything is being moved by a superior intelligence. The ultimate superior intelligence is the super soul, Krishna. But he has his subordinates, his expansions, and the bureaucracy of the universe, if you will. The demigods, you know. It's like, you know, the president doesn't do everything. There's a Department of Defense, Department of Education, Department of this, Department of that. But they refer to the president. When he, you know, when he, a new president comes in, he gets rid of the old cabinet. It's a new cabinet. Supposedly, they're more in tune with his ideas and intelligence of how to run things. Now, in this universal government, it's perfectly in tune. Of course, you do find sometimes the demigods getting out of line. Krishna had, like, Indra, you know, he chastises him. So they're also independent. I mean, they have their own will. But basically, they're running things according to the supreme will of the Lord. So this world is full of life. Even the things that supposedly are dead, the Lord, the super soul is there, and it's a body or related to a god or a deva. So there's nothing in existence, you know. That's sometimes it's said that this whole universe is the external body of Brahma. You know, I've seen that also. So anyway, this is a new way of seeing the world. This is like, in one sense, the first step in God realization. There's a chapter like that in the second canto. And we have a similar thing in the Bhagavad Gita in the seventh chapter. Where Krishna, he's giving us a way of transforming our vision so that we begin to see God everywhere. We can't see right now in our contaminated state or impure state the original beautiful form of Krishna standing with the flute. You know, that's ultimately, we are meant to see that always within the heart. You know. But we can certainly see this world. You know, now if we see it always related to Krishna, you know, the light of this, there's the sun. Oh, I don't remember. Bhagavad Gita says he's the light of the sun and the moon. So you think of Krishna, right? You see the ocean. Oh, I don't remember the 10th chapter. Krishna says, of bodies of water, I'm the ocean. You see? So in this way, whatever you experience, the fragrances, the sounds, you know, is meant to remind you of Krishna. Now, the fact is that it's impossible to maintain that vision unless you are also attempting to use the things of this world in the service of Krishna. Like here we have a temple. The temple is nothing but, you know, analyze it, there's earth here, you know, cement, there's all kinds of marble, right? There's electricity going through, that's radiant energy, that's fire. There's water coursing through the plumbing. You know, there's nothing but earth, water, fire, air. There's air here, the ether, right? But this particular conglomeration of those elements has, by the intelligence of devotees, been made into a temple that reminds you of Krishna. In other words, there's nothing but Krishna katha supposed to be going on here, glorification of Krishna. Therefore, if someone walks through this into this temple, then they can easily see that it's related to Krishna because everything around is all transcendental, right? So this is the attempt. You know, this is an example of the Vaikuntha world. These temples are meant to be like Vaikuntha, you know, little emissaries of embassies of Vaikuntha, meaning that Vaikuntha is that place where it's obvious that everything's related to Krishna because it's all glorifying Krishna. There's nothing dead, you know. Even the gopis are seeing, you know. Even the creepers, they're dancing, and you know the bees are humming, but they're singing verses about Krishna. You know, this is the spiritual world. It's overt, but what is hidden in this world is overt there. So our understanding of how all of these things are really Krishna's energy is made real, and we can actually realize it by attempting in our small way to utilize whatever we can in the service of Krishna. Yeah. That's bhakti. How does that go? Anasaktasya vishayan yatyataham upayunjata nirbandha krishna sambandha yuktam vairagya muchate. Because the key is vairagya. Vairagya means detachment, dispassion, not having the desire, not even the desire, what to speak of the activity, of using these things of this world, Krishna's energy, in our devotional, in our own, for our own pleasure, for sense gratification. That's vairagya. So here he's giving, Rupa Goswami is giving the direction of practical vairagya. It's called yukta vairagya. Vairagya in yoga. Without the yoga part, you can't be a vairagi for very long. It's artificial. So he says, anasaktasya vishayan. Without developing an attachment for the things of the vishayas, the enjoyable things of this world. Rather, using them in Krishna service where appropriate. Upayunjita. Asaktista vishayanya yataharam, as appropriate. Upayunjita. Nirbanda, Krishna sambandhe. You're no longer bound. You're not bound to those vishayas anymore, you know, as objects of enjoyment. Rather, you're developing your Krishna sambandha. You have to be bound to something. You're going to be bound to some of that. You get bound up to Krishna with love. And this is called yukta vairagya. This is a genuine detachment. This is how it's possible. Otherwise, even if you read Sankhya, and this is why the Sankhya alone, atheistic Sankhya, is useless. It's a total deviation. Because it you really cannot remain, you know, simply analyzing everything and understanding, I'm not this. I'm not this. I'm not, you know, neti, it's called as a neti neti, you know. But that's all negative. What about your positive desire to engage in loving exchange, you know? If you're not going to engage in loving exchange with Krishna, it's going to be with this world, you know? The so-called inanimate things and the so-called animate things, other bodies, that's going to be where your attachment is going to be. And it's frustrating. It's totally frustrating. You know, it can never fulfill that void, you know, as you know, void is which is the absence of Krishna. Yugayaktam Nameshena, we're singing every morning. Govinda Virahena, and this is how we should feel. But we don't feel like that. We're trying to fill the void with everything else, and it's not fillable. So that this is the great value of these this understanding. But to maintain it, we require to engage in devotional service, practical devotional service. And then you would directly experience, just like, you know, beautiful scents or something. You know, there's a huge incense market out there. I just realized within the last year why it's such a big incense market. Because people want to hide what they're smoking in their apartments. So they have a big incense market, you know. So that's material, right? So they're buying this incense. Okay, right, this will protect me. Now I can just blow this incense and then I can smoke whatever I want at home. Or whatever. Or let me just create a nice scent at home so I'll have a nice atmosphere so I can enjoy, you see. But we're offering this incense to Krishna, you know. Now, we also experience a nice scent, but the idea is it's meant to remind us, oh, this has been offered to Krishna, and this is for his pleasure. And Prabhupada makes the point, the servant enjoys almost on the level of the king. If you happen to be a servant in a great palace, well, you're also experiencing the nice food and you know, it's warm in there during the winter. You know, that's a big thing. And, you know, all kinds of things, right? So you're also experiencing that. But that's not the motive for your activity. Your motive is to serve the master. And if he's pleased, then you can maintain the service and so forth. But as a byproduct, you're also enjoying. This is the whole idea. The motive is to please the beloved. That alone is pleasing, to see that he or she is happy. The byproduct is that you enjoy, you know. And the amazing thing is you enjoy millions of times more than if you try to enjoy on your own. This is directly experienced. This is a very important concept. So here we are in the material world. What is it? Well, we've just learned what it is, you know. It's a construct that's been built really for us. It's built on our desires. You remember at the beginning, the latent or... what do they call them? They didn't call them latent, but that's what I mean. Latent desires of the living entities within Mahavishnu. I like this term, suspended animation. You're not dead, but you're not doing anything, you know. But still the desires are there. So those living entities are stuck. They'll never get liberated unless they can get purified of this material desire, work out the karma, or get rid of it, and get to the point, as we're studying in the evening, of naishkarmya. You know, of inaction, of acting but not incurring any karma. You know, how do you do that? You have to act non-fruitively. The motive for your action has to be selfless, completely selfless. And the only way that can be completely selfless is if it's for Krishna. Otherwise, there's always something. You're serving your son, but you want them to look at you and smile and, you know, and take care of you when you get old. You know, there's always some food element in there. You know, wife is serving the husband, but, you know, take care of me, get me this, buy me this, give me children, like that. There's always an element of food in this in there. And as soon as there's some And it's very, this is another thing I was just realizing yesterday. The wonderful thing about Krishna, because we want, you know, personal attention. Anyone who's been around kids, you know, you get old if you don't have kids. The most, you know, the teeth-gritting thing is that they demand attention. You know, the mother is trying to listen to the class, and the kid is pulling at the sari and getting in the face and screaming, right? Attention, right? Because the source of their love and their everything is the mother, and the mother wants to hear about Krishna. And the kid doesn't want that. You know, constant attention. So, the parents, you know, as human beings or living entities, we can only really have relations with very limited, you know, per number of people. This whole thing with Facebook is kind of, you know, thousands of friends or something. What kind of friends is it, you know? I mean, it's a misnomer. But it's an attempt to imitate Krishna. Krishna really can have unlimited intimate friends. When it says, Sudadam Sarva Bhutanam, this is the last line of the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Oh, excuse me, the second to last line. It says, he is the bosom friend, you know, bosom buddy. You know, Sudhida means the one who's dearest to your heart. He cares about us the most. The problem is we don't care about him enough. If we did, then we'd realize that. So he has our welfare at heart. That's why he comes here and speaks all this. You know, and he can do it for every individual person. Every individual person can have his own personal relationship with Krishna. That's because he's God, you know. So we're searching for that, but it's frustrating. We can't have that in this world. We certainly can't be the friend of all. We can hardly be the friend of 12 people, you know, really, you know. And it's and then there's the jealousy that comes. Well, if he or she is with me, or if he or she is with that person, he or she can't be with me. And so you become jealous, you know. But with Krishna, it's just the opposite. You're happy to see him pleased. And he can have unlimited personal relations with you. There's no point of being jealous. In fact, you become happy to see others advancing in devotional service because it means Krishna's being pleased more. This is the Vaikuntha mood. Radharani says in the end of the... Lord Chaitanya says in the mood of Radharani, if Krishna wants to be with another gopi, I'll just take your hand and bring him to Krishna. Because that's what he wants, you know, and that'll make me happy. This is not an ordinary love affair. You can see that. If that, you know, an ordinary love affair, then, you know, you try to kill the person. You hate them, right? So now, we've gone a little far from Sankhya, but the idea is that what we're trying to achieve by separately enjoying the elements of this world, we can never achieve. We can only achieve that happiness, that peace, that sense of belonging, you know, in relation to Krishna. So that's what's going on here. But this is a way of seeing the world. Every one of these verses here, we should see it. Oh, this is just a combination of matter and spirit. When you see someone on the street, right, we see so many people, you see that first. You say, okay, the person is not this body. The person is a spirit inside. And you see, is there a way, somehow or other, that I can give them a little Krishna consciousness? You know? Give the person. Doesn't matter if they're old, young, or whatever. If they're conscious, if they're, you know, if they somehow walk around as a devotee, then, you know, we're famous now. As soon as they see this suit, Hare Krishna bounces in the mind. That's the unlimited benefit. Millions of births, they've been waiting to just have that thought. Hare Krishna. Oh, there's a Hare Krishna. What to speak if, you know, you say Hare Krishna to them. Then it enters the ear. Very powerful. There's a verse in the sixth chapter. The sixth canto, excuse me. I remembered this. If someone hears the holy name, usually we say if someone chants once, but here it distinctly says, it's right in the Sanskrit, if someone hears the holy name even once, then so many eons of karma are gone. So therefore, we shouldn't say Hare Krishna to them. You know, to see what a benefit it is. What to speak of if they could take some literature, an invitation, come to the temple, you see? So that's the vision of the preacher, of the Sankirtan devotee. That this is a world full of living entities who are in ignorance, they're suffering like anything. You know, many of these human beings will be lucky to get a human body in the next life, probably won't, unless they get an intervention from a devotee who gives them a little chance to be Krishna conscious. So that gives us a sense of urgency, you know. And it also gives you this samabuddhi, this sense of there's a oneness there. You know, plants, animals, insects, human beings, they're all spirit souls. Therefore, we shouldn't hurt anyone unnecessarily. You know, they're all living entities. They're all going through their way, you know, in their scheduled term in each body. So don't interrupt it. Don't give them any unnecessary pain. It'll come back on you anyway. So we see it that way, and then it is a great field. This is the field. The field of, you know, Lord Chaitanya's dancing, chanting movement. That's what it's meant to be. You know, break open, you read about these things in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Suddenly, it all depends on consciousness. This is why, one person, you know, every person is precious. One person who becomes really Krishna conscious can affect thousands more if they get fired up. You can just see this party of book distributors. Who knows, you know, those people they're meeting, these students, one or more or 10 or 100 may actually become inspired by that book, become a devotee, and affect thousands more, you see? Because I'll tell you, it's one thing. Once you taste a little bit of Krishna consciousness, you can never go back to be a whole-on, full-on karmi. You know, you always remember. You know, there's a certain ratchet effect. You know, the more that Krishna consciousness spreads, we may not see it. You know, it's moving at its own speed. But in my short, you know, almost 40 years, I've seen this movement, despite all of our, you know, attempts to stop it in many ways, mess it up. Blow it. Still, it's growing. The chanting is growing in popularity, that's for sure. The books are going out, you know. Maybe not so much in Europe now as they used to be in the 80s, 90s, you know, or Russia, but they're going out by the millions in India, you know. And those are human beings. They also travel and goes on. The internet is exploding. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know? You know, the 10,000 years of Lord Chaitanya's movement, we're just 500 or so years into it. It's like a wave, anandam buddhivardhanam. So we want to try to become a part of that wave, and both helping to move it on and experiencing the wonderful peace and bliss, you know. And not external peace. We want to be very active, you know, but inside there's a certain immovable, you know, consciousness that we want to experience. So that's a little ways off from Sankhya, but I think that you can relate that. And this next translation is pretty remarkable. It's a purport all its own for a little four-line verse. So we'll let the next person deal with that. Any questions or comments on these few points? Yes, Prabhu.
What's the verse? Maybe just a line from a verse that one who's afflicted by karma sees karma everywhere. And I'm pretty sure he uses the word karma.
You know, I'm drawing a blank. I vaguely remember there is a verse like that. Is it the Gita? It's not a Gita verse.
I don't think so.
No, it's not a Gita verse. I'm sorry, we'll have to research it. Yeah. Any comments, questions? I'll read the translation again. Whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contain both the material nature and its enjoyer, the spirit soul. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.